Hello, everybody, and welcome to the latest episode of the Belgian Football Podcast. My name's Scott Coyne, and I'll be your host for this episode. And joining me to discuss the week in Belgian football is our very own Joris Beck. How are you, Joris?
I'm all right. I'm a lot better than last week. Well, everyone that has listened last week will know I was feeling sick, and I definitely was. I had some bed rest, but this week I feel a lot better. I haven't managed to see as much of the cup games during the week, though, as I was hoping for. But we will touch on them a little bit throughout our whole roundup of this week.
Well, it's great to have you back. And you were missed, actually, because there was a couple of people who got in touch with us on social media to wish you well, which is always nice. So you were definitely missed. And we've actually had there's been a fair bit of news this week. Sackings in Oostend, new American Zebras arriving in Charleroi, fans getting locked out of the Classico, of course, which we'll get to in a little while, and Mechelen Ultras falling out with the club over them not being allowed to unveil what would have been their biggest ever TIFO as well. So a lot to get through on this week's BFP. We'll start, as usual, with a score rundown as far as the Pro League's concerned. Friday night's game, the basement battle between Kortrijk and Westerlo finished 2-1 to Westerlo. Cercle lost 3-1 at home to Antwerp. St. Truiden and Leuven played a 1-1 draw in what was a really entertaining opening game, actually. The Buffaloes, Ghent won convincingly 4-0 against Molenbeek. Mechelen and Club Brugge finished goalless, although some would say it shouldn't have. We'll get to that in a little while. Eupen lost 3-1 to Joris' side, Genk. Sunday's big game, the Classico, Standard and Anderlecht finished 2 each, and Union Saint-Gilloise winning bandwagon rolls on. They won 3-1 in Charleroi. So let's dive in right at the start, Joris. Let's go to Friday night's game, the opening game of the weekend, which was the basement battle between two sides who are still currently managerless. Not often that happens. Kortrijk 1, Westerlo 2. Westerlo managing to get the win after the departure of Jonas de Roque in a game which ultimately kind of drops Kortrijk into a little bit more trouble, as we know. I saw the majority of this game, and I have to say it was much more entertaining than I expected it to be, particularly the second half. Kortrijk came out in the second half, obviously a goal down, really had to try and get something out of the game, managed to get back into it. A really good goal from Isaac Davies, fantastic header. And for much of the second half, they actually looked more like the side who were going to nick it. But sure enough, the sucker punch came in Westerlo's favour. Erdon Daki managing to get the points for Westerlo. And yeah, Kortrijk find himself further isolated, Joris, and with a goal difference now of, what, minus 23, and it's not even January. No, folks, that is not a temperature. it is actually Kortrijk's goal difference. Westerlo, obviously, huge win for them because this just brings them slightly closer to getting out of that drop zone.
Definitely, yeah. And it's a bit of a mixed bag, I guess, as well. But like how thin everything can be. Westerlo grabbing 6 points from their games against Kortrijk, which they probably both of them didn't really deserve to win based on the chances or the dominance in the game. But yeah, that's 6 out of their 14 points. You can do the math there. That they won 3 games, 2 of them against Kortrijk as well. They're now 4 points ahead of Kortrijk. So yeah, if the games would have turned out a bit more logical with the run of play, let's say that Kortrijk would have gotten maybe not even 6 points, but 4 points out of this. Their fates would have been reversed, basically. But now it's looking more and more dim for Kortrijk, of course. Definitely 4 points behind the safe spot now as well. So not even talking about getting out of the relegation zone. That's already some gap of 7 points. That's increasing and less likely that it will happen. It didn't increase this weekend, but it's still a game less that they can manage to do so in a team that only has 1-2 games as well, of course. So they will have to win more than these 2 games that they already won to even get out of the relegation zone at the moment. That's even regardless of other teams dropping points. Yeah, definitely wasting their chances in this game, and definitely did not reward themselves for what they were showing on the pitch. Yeah, and for Westerlo, this was a very really well-timed result, putting a lot of pressure, especially in such a Friday night game as well, putting a lot of pressure going into the weekend on a lot of other teams, not in the least Leuven, which they leapfrogged now, and they're not in the bottom two, and so the relegation spots at the moment anymore. Of course, still in these relegation playoffs virtually, but they already knew before this game that this would be a run, work of a bit of a longer run of form, and not hinging on one result here. Yeah, scoring efficiency, of course, as well. They had 3 shots on target and 2 of them went in. Yeah, okay, of course, on the second goal, of course, I don't think it counts as a shot on target, the initial attempt from Vazen, but the rebound from Dachi, of course, that shot from Vazen itself has also a big chance. And that's also why I think they actually ended up with a higher XG, expected goals, than Kortrijk ultimately, but... it didn't really reflect both teams' games that the goal felt there. But a really interesting result for them, a really good win for them. And we'll have to put a string of results together, of course, to really get climb the table even further. But at the moment. This week they will have been happy.
Yeah, well, speaking of climbing the table, looking at both sides' upcoming schedules as well, certainly Westerlo look like, on paper anyway, the side that are going to pick up more points. I mean, Kortrijk coming up, not much good news in the horizon for them. They've got your side, Genk, away next, then Cercle, and then Ghent. So not too many points in there for them, I suspect, unless something amazing happens. Westerlo, on the other hand, have got Eupen at home, Antwerp away, and Molenbeek at home, so potentially more points for them, and a possible glimmer of getting out of the drop zone there. So we'll see how they get on over the next, in the run-up to Christmas anyway, that's those fixtures. Let's move on, shall we, to the Jan Breidel, a game I was quite looking forward to this weekend, Cercle against Antwerp. I always knew this was going to be quite an interesting game, kind of tactically, and sure enough, it turned out that way. Antwerp winning 3-1 in the end. I was really impressed with Antwerp this weekend, Joris. I thought their midfield dynamism was really strong. Their circulation use and speed of distribution with the ball was really, really good. And we know that if you're going to beat a press, a hard organised press, then the one thing you have to do is move the ball quickly. And Antwerp did that really impressively this weekend. And Cercle really struggled to get into their natural rhythm, I thought. And by that time, obviously, Antwerp had got their noses in front. And they managed to kind of get back into it after being 2-0 down. Kevin Denke scoring on the 70th minute mark, giving them a glimmer of hope of trying to get something out of the game, but Antwerp managed to get it over the line in the end. And physically, obviously, Antwerp got the better of Cercle this weekend as well, which is not something many sides do, as we know. So I think Mark Van Bommel got his tactical approach and his game plan absolutely right this weekend, and you'll be really pleased with that result, because that's Antwerp up to fourth now and right back into the mix.
Yeah, I quickly want to jump back to the previous game, actually, because we didn't talk about the sacking of the book that much as we should have, maybe, as well. But I'll just mention it here. But yeah, like the reasons for his sacking, he already has denied them on his social media accounts, but like he had to, for example, the most funny one is probably that he had to drive by in his car instead of the team bus, because he had to be cat sits, I guess, the cat of his girlfriend.
That's okay with me. I've got 3 cats here at home, and I would be exactly the same. I'd be like, no, you go on ahead, I'll get you guys later. My favorite one was the stories which everyone will have heard about the leek soup. Apparently Glenn threw a wobbly because there wasn't any leek soup available, to which his retort in the media this week was, there's nobody less likely to be bothered about there being no leek soup than me. But yeah, there's been some really interesting stories flying around as to why he was removed. And Glenn's argument is that it was all personal and nothing to do with the football. And I think there's probably a grain of truth in that, to be honest, because at the end of the day, and I'm sure he'll always argue this, although they're still in big, big trouble, Courtrike, there has been a tiny improvement since he was there. So from his point of view, things were, you know, not necessarily getting better in the way that they would want, but there was a modicum of improvement.
Yeah, exactly. But don't want to dwell too much on it either anymore, since they're already in a different game. But the only thing is, like, most likely it looks like Belosin might be. There are a lot of rumors of him becoming their new old manager.
He was
in the book, actually.
Yeah, he was seen entering the Gildenspören this week, not in disguise apparently, but almost. So yeah, they've yet to announce, as do Westerlo, as we were just saying, and I think both clubs probably have some of the same candidates on the shortlist.
Yeah, it looks like it. But okay, like I said, I'm missing a bit with the schedule of this week podcast. So to come back to Cirque Antwerp, well, I actually agree with a lot of the points that Scott mentioned, that you already mentioned here. Antwerp really impressed me, especially first half, second half, even regardless of scoring. But in general, They let the foot a bit off the gas, or Cirque to cope a bit with what Antwerp were doing. But also in the, I think it was the first game of the season, even the reverse fixture, or early in the season anyway, in there, Antwerp also actually coped really well with Cirque's pressure, and actually have shown how to beat them, I think, as well. Notwithstanding the Cirque anyway are a little bit not in a bad form, just they'd have but we're in points though. Yes, they got only gotten 4 points out of their last five games, so there's a bit of a drop off, which is partially, for a big part, due to a tough schedule that they had as well in the past few weeks, where they ultimately didn't get any that much points. Nobody really expected them, but maybe they should have picked up a draw or two more to make it a bit less painful in comparison to the teams that, since they are fighting so high on the table, that the teams around them, of course, then the gap increases quite quickly when you most of the times lose these games. But yeah, a bit of the Antwerp anyway are a bit of a bogey team for them, of course. They've only beaten them twice in the 21st century, so yeah, that is definitely something to, that tells you how much of a bogey team they are. Well, the only thing that there's a positive for them, I guess, is a personal one. You already mentioned it as well. Denki scoring, and they're still topping the top scorers list with 12 goals now. For Antwerp, on the other hand, more encouragement maybe. Only their second away win of the season as well, so that's in itself quite remarkable. It's good that they got it, and maybe it turns their away fortunes around as well. Like I said, they're really impressive in the first half. I think they control Cirque really well. But for the rest, I had to mention a little bit of a funny moment about a Balikwisha miss. I don't know if you saw that. He tried to control the ball with his shoulder when he just needed to hit hit the ball in an almost empty net. And he missed that control horribly, so it went out. Ultimately, I think in the dressing room they're probably also having a laugh about it, because in the end it didn't really matter. Ejuke is performing more and more now as well, though. That's worth mentioning. And of course, yeah, same thing you can say, I guess, is also for Ilenika, still only 17, of course. And it's already, he's actually has a really good goals per minute rate across the competitions as well. So encouraging signs for Antwerp. And wish them good luck in Europe this against Barcelona. When is it? Tuesday or Wednesday?
This week.
To hopefully grab some coefficient points, regardless of, of course, it's already being confirmed that they're not going to play in Europe after the winter break. But one more thing on Cirque is, of course, this really they really are struggling, partially because of this fixture list. But on the other hand, and they're not the only team, I will be mentioning this, but their injury list, I think we've all mentioned it a few times already over the past few weeks, but it keeps growing now. It's that central midfield really seems to be cursed, because now Utkus, who is normally not playing there, was filling in that spot there, and even he had to get off injured in the first half, even I believe. So yeah, definitely. It might also have to do a bit with their style of play as well, of course, though, that it takes their toll of their players a bit. It definitely, there are some factors that go into this slight drip of form in at least getting the points.
Yeah, speaking of getting points, they've got a favourable schedule as well coming up. They've got Leuven away and Kortrijk at home next. You know, both games that they would probably expect to get maximum points out of, I would imagine. Antwerp, on the other hand, are coming in for a little tough period. I mean, obviously, you mentioned Barcelona there this week in Europe, which is as tough as it gets almost. But domestically, they've got a tough run coming up in the lead up to Christmas as well. They've got Anderlecht away, Genk away, and Standard at home as well. So them kind of getting up into fourth and getting back into the mix, the playoff one mix, is important at this stage because of some of the fixtures that they've got coming up, definitely. Let's move on, shall we, to the Daewoo Wasabi Steyr Stadium, as it's now known these days, for St. Truiden 1, Leuven 1. The obvious question here, Joris, is how did St. Truiden not win this game? It's a bit like Groundhog Day. We've been saying this a lot about St. Truiden in recent weeks. The answer is partially a certain Toby Lyson, of course, who had arguably the game of his life. This is a goalkeeper who is not even first choice at Leuven, is coming in for cover and has put in a performance that very much says, I'm not giving up this spot, that's for sure. Absolutely amazing performance from him this weekend. St. Truiden pretty much dominated this match, went ahead very early, inside the first 5 minutes actually. Kaveh Zahira Leslam, the young American striker, getting his first goal of the season. He actually he's dislocated his shoulder apparently now, so he's going to miss the remainder of the games this year, unfortunately, which is a bit of a bummer for him, having just scored his first goal as well. And we know that St. Truiden obviously have got some pretty prominent striker issues coming up, with players about to leave them for the African Cup of Nations as well in January. Leuven managing to get back into this out of nothing, actually. A really nice interchange between John Thorsteinsson and Jonathan Brunns. To get a fantastic headed equaliser. And then, of course, Richie Sagrado gets sent off after half an hour. And then the tide turns completely in St. Truiden's favour. And it's really much all St. Truiden thereafter in the second half. And they really did batter Leuven to some extent. And yeah, it's back to Toby Lyson again, you know, just fantastic performance, and he's really the main reason why St. Truiden didn't get the points. I was remarking the other day, Joris, actually, in social media, that it's kind of frightening the number of points that St. Truiden have dropped recently from winning positions. And I had a look, and just in recent weeks, this is not over the course of the season, just over the course of the last month or so, they've actually dropped 7 points from match winning positions. And if you added that to their tally at the moment, they'd be somewhere around about fourth or fifth at the moment if they hadn't done that. So it's something they need to sort out, really.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. I actually have another stat that makes it even clearer. I guess the last 6 games, they are actually undefeated in the league. They have lost in the cup to Gent last week, though. But but they've only won one of those 6 games, though. So the rest were draws. Yeah, that doesn't make you move up the table, of course. Definitely. I had it on my list. Zahira Islam's first. That's also the first goal of one of their 2 strikers this whole season. That also adds to why they don't get these points, maybe. Of course, there is one player in form there that is high on the top scorer. It's just Aburakaik, with Koita, of course. But yeah, that's on his own. He still needs some other players around him also contributing. And it's an additional annoyance then, of course, for Zahir Islam, I guess, that he gets that goal, but then gets that dislocated shoulder as well. He also missed the sitter, or at least, well, in the form that Nelson was in, a big chance to on goal at least, to a strike on goal after scoring that first goal. So it's not like the saying goes with a ketchup bottle, unfortunately for him. Yeah. And also, well, a fun fact. So, Tobe Leijsen then to go to Leuven first as well, secured Garcia's first point as manager from Leuven, of Leuven as well. I think that's in the fourth or fifth game. So it needed to come soon, I think, before he would already be on a lot more pressure. And okay, the way he did it, it's of course a bit, it is how it had to happen after that red card in the first half, I guess. Which was a bit harsh in my opinion as well, but yeah, nonetheless, they really fought for it. And Tobe Leijsen had 12 saves in the game, to also underline that a bit more. And that a few of those saves were against Rijn van Helden, the Sint-Truiden player, and apparently they're really good mates, and they might have gone to a bar after the game, and one of them would have been shining and the other one probably a bit less in that bar. I don't know if this event actually happens, but it's nice to think about, I guess. The friendship, not being ruined, I guess, by this performance, although. Yeah, one of the two was saying, like, and you can guess who, I think, like, I actually don't want to hear of him tonight anymore. And the other one was like, well, I'll probably send him a text. Yeah, I'll probably text him. Yeah, but, I think you can guess who was who in this scenario.
Yeah, just picking up on Leuven there on this game too. Oscar Garcia getting his first point, as you were saying. Still winless in four. They've slipped to 15th now. He was actually very positive this week. You know, even after the game, he said that he felt that he's seen nothing but positive signs from his squad since he came in, which I suppose is understandable. You know, you're coming in a difficult situation, and you know you're needing to get the players on side, and you're not wanting to say anything too critical too early. So, although that was a slightly strange comment, and being as positive as he was, I thought I could kind of understand it. But yeah, they've slipped to 15th, and it's what I was saying last week. They really are desperately searching for that first win under him, because that's the sort of thing that could really make the difference.
Definitely, because like, and despite what I said, indeed they actually dropped in like you mentioned here in the rankings, and actually in the position they are, a drop is still very significant. Of course, if you drop from 7 to 8, it's less significant, and if you drop from 14 to 15, obviously.
Yeah, and it's getting very tight down there at the bottom as well. There are two or three sides, you know, above the drop zone who, you know, very easily could get dragged into that, especially if some of the sides in that drop zone manage to get a couple of wins as well. So there's not much room for movement at the moment. A club that does have a lot of movement at the moment is the Buffaloes, Ghent managing to get a very convincing 4-0 win against Molenbeek this weekend. Total domination from Ghent this weekend, I thought, Joris. And Molenbeek really struggling to contain Ghent's kind of attacking prowess and their movement as well. Molenbeek actually, have been struggling against the big boys this season a lot. Not entirely unexpectedly. They've obviously lost to Ghent, Anderlecht, Union, Club, and your side Genk as well. Club obviously putting 7 past them. Your side Genk putting 4 past them in the opening weekend, and then them conceding another 4 this weekend as well. So, you know, they really are kind of, you know, nowhere near the level of some of these top sides yet. And those points that they picked up in the opening weeks of the season are becoming ever more important now, because I think Molenbeek are only 1 win in 11, I think it is, in the league now. So those early points really are kind of helping to keep them above that drop zone at the moment. They've got some favourable fixtures coming up, though, in terms of points that they won't be too terrified by. They've got St Truiden coming up, Club, which obviously is going to be a difficult one, Westerlo and Eupen as well. So they've got games that, you know, they will fancy their chances of coming up there. But they're on a slightly concerning run of form at the moment. Ghent, on the other hand, continuing to perform well, undefeated in 7 in the league, undefeated in 12 across all competitions. And it's important, obviously, for them to keep the momentum coming up, don't they? Because they've got January looming, and we've been talking about this for weeks. They want to make sure they can get as many points in the bag as possible before they lose players. Their schedule, they've got a Battle of Flanders coming up next. They go to Bruges for that. And then they've got Leuven, Kortrijk and Mechelen. So they'll be hoping to do pretty well before the end of the year.
Yeah, and also I feel like everyone has been talking so much about his absentees already, potential absentees in January. I think in the end it actually will be not as bad as everyone is thinking. Like, I don't think, for example, that this will for them make the difference between which playoffs they will get, I suppose, to get in. But yeah, definitely very good performance from them. Originally looked a bit though like the ball, like one of those evenings where the ball didn't want to go in because they had so many chances already in that first half an hour before they put the first goal away. In the end, Orban missing a few. I think if there's one player in the Gent squad who's not going to be happy despite this win, it is going to be him, because there was also. He missed quite a few chances, and some of them are really good ones as well, like that almost unmissable ones. And like you would not believe that this was the same guy that scored so many goals last right after he came in last winter in the early 2023. He's struggling a bit in the league at least to score a goal. Definitely interesting to see how that will develop as well. Especially since his replacement, Tiso Daly, did even score in this few minutes that he got, so that I'm quite sure he's not so happy about everything that's going on here. But also finally a win, like despite all the good statistics that you mentioned here, also they have been a bit on the Sint-Truiden-like form, I suppose. First win after 3 draws in a row. So like too many draws in this undefeated run. Also the first clean sheet in the league since the end of September. That's also of course a good stat for being high up in the table, of course. Yeah, and for Molenbeek, yeah, they really are struggling. Also there are a few reasons though, of course. Their attack has been diminished. It feels a bit like they've been diminished in form, not only in players in quantity but also in quality. Like it's dropping a bit, or at least it's not very consistent. And yeah, like that goes with injuries as well. Already in the attack it's actually already a bit longer, but now in defense it's really they're really struggling. Lejeancourt made his they wanted to bring him slowly back into the fold. He already played in the cup during the week, but now he had to come on after 10 minutes to replace Segovia in central defense. And yeah, then only 20 minutes later, unfortunately, he got off as well through an injury and another injury as well. So yeah, that's definitely something they should be, regardless of the quality of the players, but the quantity of the central defense is really going down. Like, can't really blame whoever came on again. I forgot his name even, but he played in the second amateur division last season as well. So that's the level of players that they're now looking into. Of course, I hope for this player that he actually improves. But it's a big step up, obviously. And then, yeah, going cold in a game against arguably the best attack, or definitely one of the best attacks in the league as well. It's not an easy feat. So I think he did all right. I need to look up the name now. See, after talking so much about this player, and also to give him some respect, I suppose. But I'll get back to you on that one.
We'll move on while you do that little bit of background research, shall we, to Mechelen and Club Brugge. Mechelen Ultra's actually getting into a little spat this week with the club, as I was kind of hinting at the start. They had plans to unveil their largest ever TIFO inspired by the game Red Redemption for the gamers out there, which the Mechelen fans had rather wonderfully named Yellow Dead Redemption. That was the Yellow Red Redemption. That was the name of the TIFO, and it's such a shame that that wasn't able to be unveiled for this game for a couple of reasons. One was... and this was the main reason, I suspect, was there was a dispute with the fire service as to whether the Ultras had used fire-resistant foil. Bit of a disagreement about that. And then there was a sense that the Pro League felt it was a little bit offensive, which I think most people think is not the case at all. But yeah, that was very much the kind of the background to this game. Mechelen actually getting a hard-earned point here. Interestingly, they're still not showing much offensively at the moment. Basse obviously is preferred to Lauberbach, understandably. I think he offers a little bit more, but on the offensive side, Mechelen are still looking pretty blunt. Besnik Cassie this week saying that he really needs some reinforcements in January because the squad's pretty thin on the ground. Club, on the other hand, I don't know about you, Joris, I thought they were really quite poor this weekend. I don't think they really did enough to win this game. Ironically, they had two goals chopped off, one of which, was it over the line, was it not? I think it probably was. I saw quite a few angles, and in the end, I kind of agreed with the decision. The more controversial one, obviously, is the second one, Thiago's goal, the header. Was he or was he not offside? The refereeing department has now come out and confirmed that they think that was a mistake. It was a goal. I thought it was all right at the time as well. In real time when I saw it, I didn't really see any problems with it at all. But despite the club's fans' anger at that, and they've been pretty frustrated in the aftermath of this game, you know, sometimes, you know, you win some, you lose some of these decisions, really. And that aside, as I was saying, I felt they didn't play well enough to get anything out of the game anyway. The good news for club is they're undefeated in seven across all competitions. And in those seven, they haven't conceded yet either. So their defensive improvements are continuing as well. And it seems to be almost the opposite issue. Both clubs here are having opposite issues of the main issue. You know, club's issue is, their defence is improving and up front they're improving generally as well over the last few weeks. Mechelen, on the other hand, you know, up front they're really struggling at the moment. And as I was saying, you know, the contrasting fortunes there. But yeah, they Malima delighted with a point this weekend, as evidenced by their reaction on the bench at full time.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, first I'll drop that name, Jovkar Dudaev from Molenbeek. That's the one. Okay, I also saw now it was true that he did that, but he also was loaned out from Molenbeek at the time. So it's a youth player actually as well. So also have to grant him that. But the end of the last season, nonetheless, he was playing in a very low division in comparison to the first division, obviously. Yeah. I have to say, like, you win some, you lose some. I don't buy that argument when there is a VAR. Like, before VAR, that would have been a valid argument. And with VAR, this I am standing with Tony Dyler here, I guess. Like, this not, well, not in the sense that we should not have VAR necessarily, but yeah, you can't accept these kind of mistakes from the VAR at this level, definitely, though. So that's definitely something but I would not necessarily agree with you. Nonetheless, yes, there's a few things, of course. Like, do they deserve to win? Maybe not, but did they actually win? Okay, another thing you can't really say, since the goal was not in the final second of the game, but nonetheless, they probably could have won it, nonetheless. But indeed, the clean sheets standing out for Club Brugge. Actually, clean sheets and the goal that wasn't is the two things I have noticed, had written down for them. Yeah, and for Mechelen, I guess a good point. It was maybe a poor game from both sides, nonetheless. But one of the sides is a bit more happy with that, of course, in Mechelen then. And Lauberbach not starting, it also depends. Like, before the game, Hase was also saying, like, I don't think he's fit enough to start yet. He's also coming back from an injury still. So also we'll have to see how that continues in the upcoming weeks since he's close to his return or maybe even his starting 11 return. Then we'll have to see what Hazi does with that later on. And the main thing for this game was, I think, I believe the TIFO. Yeah, so many weird things happening this week in Belgian football. That it's very painful, mainly that it actually had been made and so on already. Like if they would have not started making it, but already I don't know if it's conceptual. I don't know how these things actually work, so I should not talk too much about it. But like if you have to conceptualize, or you anyway, I guess you know from the club side out as well, like it's coming, like then be a bit more upfront about it, I guess, as well. But it was not only the club, I believe. It was what was it, the municipality, the
firefighters are an issue. It's a murky one, actually, because I think at the center of all of the disagreement was, I think the Mechelen Ultras group were saying that the type of foil that they used was the same that they'd used on around 50 previous TIFOs. Admittedly, they were smaller ones. This was a particularly big one.
That's the main thing, of course. And of course, it was the biggest one. So I guess that, I don't know how exactly, but I guess that exponentially increases the risk.
I think that's true. Yeah. And to be fair, actually, the club were quite accommodating because they did offer the opportunity for the TIFO to be unfurled while that area of the stadium was still closed. So that fans could still see it, and then it would be taken down before they could, you know, open the gates to allow the fans in that section in. But unfortunately, the Ultras decided, a clean break was necessary here. And it's just a shame, because actually, for those who've seen it on social media, it's a really nice piece of art, actually. We'll maybe share it over the coming days. It's worth seeing, but it is definitely out there in its own way. Moving on then, shall we? Let's have a chat about your side this week then, Joris. Your side, Genk, winning 3-1 down in the East Cantons against Eupen. Genk's technical kind of quality really kind of showing in the end. I thought your side weren't entirely great in the first half, pretty flat. And interestingly, the feed that I was watching the game on, you could hear Wouter Franken and his coaching staff shouting quite a lot. I don't think they were enjoying what they were seeing, understandably. There was a lot of instructions and not friendly instructions either, coming particularly from the Genk's bench. I thought the opening goal was particularly funny, you know, a simple long ball, and Slonina kind of, I don't know what he's thinking actually there. I do not know what he's thinking at all, but go and have a look at this first goal if you haven't seen it, everybody, because it's almost as funny as Alegbi's goal for Cercle a few weeks ago in the dying seconds of that game. You know, just pure comedy gold, really.
Yeah, I feel a bit sorry for the guy, because it's twice him, of course, that is involved. But yeah, especially in the other one, he couldn't really do something about it here. Unfortunately, this is a complete misjudgment of the situation from his side. And that cost them as well, because the story of this game, I think, is also indeed open. Not taking their chances, not taking their momentum, especially in the first half. Second half, I think Genk did enough. But in the first half, it would not have been a surprise if Eupen would have taken the lead. Van der Voort, actually with a few good saves, which he also needed after a few wobbly weeks, I suppose, as well. For also not only from the side, but also from him at times. But definitely... Eupen did not take their chances. Then that mistake happens right before halftime. Also, definitely something, probably also one of the few good things that Sor did in the game. Also, another comical thing I found as well that came a bit earlier, but so Sor scoring that first goal was good with his speed. So like Franken is also really going for the speed in the attack in the last few games now, and it seems to pay off with some goals. But the other funny thing that I was mentioning 30 seconds ago was Sor actually falling over his feet. I believe it was right before quite close to before that in this that goal where originally a red card was given to Paulson. but I do not think there was anything in it that I don't also thought. I don't think anyone thought that would have been and should have been a red card. So luckily, also there, the VAR actually did do their work and definitely did overturn that red card. I was very happy that that happened. That was the most one of the most ridiculous red cards I've ever seen. So that's that for some things it's good that the VAR is there still, I guess. Although in the end it did not help, of course.
But, do you know the bit about that the red card that wasn't incident that I enjoyed the most, Joris, was after the decision had been rescinded and everyone went, yep, good call, ref. You know what I mean? You spotted that. Florian Kohfeldt, Eupen's manager, managed to get himself a yellow card for continuing to tell the referee how awful he was, even after it had been corrected. That gave me a good laugh.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely a good, indeed, a thing as well. I had also noticed that. For Genk, yeah, very much a needed win. A very much needed win. Both of these partisans are actually okay, I think. To both have a little confidence boost again, and also to jump a bit in the table as well, due to the both Bruges-based teams dropping some points. So going to fifth spot now, and a bit more back in the saddle. Let's see whether this is just a short-lived upturn in form, because of course opponents also plays a role in that. Yeah, after going out of the cup against a very much struggling Oostende side themselves last week, also in Europe looking dim, and then last week getting that blow in the final minutes by Gent. Definitely some points needed. Still also remarkable that they still got more points away from home. 17 from their 28, so they got 11 points only at home. Also the first win against Eupen this year in the last fixture between the two sides in the third fixed side as well. So that's also a small crisis against one specific side, or getting the confidence back against a certain opponent, I guess, as well. But very much a relief. The performance was not really great, but the 3 points were the most important ones here, given the situation Genk are in.
Yeah, and just on Eupen, a final point on them, Joris. Obviously, they've been looking brittle for quite a while. I think, what's that, one win in their last 12, I think, something like that. You wouldn't think that, looking at where they are in the league, to be honest. You know, a bizarre set of circumstances, you know, can come together in their favour. To, yes, they're in trouble, but you know, it could certainly be worse than it is. But yeah, there's a kind of brittleness there to them. Obviously, they've got the worst defence, marginally worse, by one goal ahead of Kortrijk, open conceding 36, I think. Just at this stage of the season, that record that Zulte Waregem set last season of goals conceded over the season, that they're well on the course to beating that if they don't do something about that as well. An important win for Genk, you're right, and I think it just settles things down a little bit for your side at the moment. Speaking of things settling down, or the opposite of that, things not settling down very much, the big game of the weekend for most people, I think, was the Glasgow Anderlecht and Standard meeting at the Lotto Park in Brussels again for the second time in 4 days. Obviously, they met a few days ago in the cup as well, in the midweek game that saw Anderlecht emerge victorious. The end of that cup game saw some ugly crowd scenes, which led to the game being stopped for a little while. The game did thankfully finish. In the aftermath of that game, obviously, Standard decided not to allow their own fans to travel to the league game this weekend. And in the aftermath of the league game, which we now know obviously finished 2-2, both clubs have confirmed that there will be no away fans at either fixture for the entirety of next season, to allow a kind of cooling off period. Plenty of drama kind of off the park in that sense. And it's kind of been coming for a little while. I'll get your thoughts on that in a second, Joris. In terms of the game itself, I think if you're a Standard fan, you must absolutely hate the sight of Anders Dreyer at the moment. Dreyer bagging 3 goals in 2 games across the 4 days, playing very well as well. A real thorn in Standard's side. Standard were actually, I thought, much better in the league game this weekend than they were in the cup game. Much improved, made much more of a game of it, especially after going behind, managing to turn the game around, not managing to hold on, unfortunately, for them. But yeah, unfortunately, the kind of matters off the pitch seems to have taken a lot of attention away from what was a decent game, actually.
Yeah, and also in the reverse fixture, he also has scored already, Dreyer, so that's four goals. Of course, in that one, Standard in the end overturns it completely, so they won't mind that one too much. But in this game, yeah, definitely Standard showed some quality, actually, that we rarely see from them away from home. It's a very much important part of the sentence there, away from home. They have rarely impressed that much. Also, it's the first consecutive draw in this specific fixture, so in the Anderlecht home game against Standard. Now, as well, Dreyer got 11 goals in his last 11 games after not having scored in the first six games as well. I'm still not going... Well, I'm not a fan of the style of the player, let's say, put it like that. That's probably not going to change, but he's definitely effective and he knows how to kick a ball at times. Of course, this time there was also a penalty involved. It's slightly taking a little bit away of it, but in general, his quality of his shooting and his goals is really good. And Verscharen also immediately assisting on that, on his first goal. That's also an encouraging sign. Him coming back and actually quite soon getting some game time and some involvement in the goals as well. And also the showing how surprisingly well Anderlecht are actually playing is that this is actually a very disappointing result for. Or are playing at least, or how many points they are racking up is a very surprisingly disappointing results against Standard at home. Of course, they want to win, but it's only only their second time they drop points at home this season. The other one being in the draw against their other rivals in Club Brugge, I believe, so far. So that's their home reputation is definitely building. Kawabe again scored as well for Standard. Still their top scorer, if I'm not mistaken, with six goals now.
Yep, the Slesen Samurai doing his thing for them again. He's the one player that I think they can kind of rely on to be anything close to consistent, I suppose, isn't he?
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah, definitely. And just in general, Standard playing really well for a change away from home. Van Heusden, on the other hand, talking about injuries, it's a bit of an injury-dominated episode like this, but he got out again.
I think there was some news in that today. I think he's had a scan and it's not as bad as they expect, so he might miss this coming weekend, but I think he'll be back quite soon. What was your feeling, Joris, on just the news of the kind of away fans being banned for next season? Obviously, this fixture has, you know, not quite had the luster that it's had historically, you know, for a while. But in recent times, there has been a bit of fan trouble again surrounding it as well. What do you make of that news coming out today?
I was very much not surprised by this news. Especially since already also in the past two seasons, so this year and last year, both supporters' fan bases have been, a bit too violent against each other, or against the pitch, or against the players, around the pitch in these games. So I was not very much surprised. I'm like, the most surprised I am is actually that it's only, what is it, until 25?
End of next season,
I was expecting it to be even 5 years or something like that, as has happened in other big fixtures, as you know, one of them as well, of course. That does not necessarily have to do with fan violence, but in the Netherlands, there is also the Ajax Feyenoord game is also always, since there's probably almost fans of those teams that actually remembered a lot of these games still, that they haven't seen one with the away fans being present there, being allowed in the stadium. So yeah, let's hope it doesn't have to go beyond the 2025 the rule here, and yeah, then and hope things cool down a little bit. I'm afraid that this is might be in vain, because this kind of punishment also can maybe spur things on a bit. What the first time it goes back would come back, of course, and so on. But okay, that might also depend. That's looking too far into the future. You can't say it also might depend on where both teams are standing at that time.
Yes, well. it's frustrating, isn't it? I think you're right, because I think something had to happen, something had to give. And obviously the clubs have decided to try and be proactive about it. I wasn't surprised by the decision. I was more surprised by kind of the timing of it, actually. And of course, Standard, obviously not allowing fans to come to the league game this weekend, was preempting a decision that obviously the Brussels police were set to ask the mayor of Anderlecht to not allow Standard fans to travel, which is what he was going to do anyway, I think. So Standard preempting that decision obviously was probably ultimately a good thing. But yeah, hopefully it doesn't last any longer than that, that's for sure. And that people can kind of, I suppose, calm down and kind of maybe just enjoy the fixture a little bit more. And maybe in that time, Standard as a club will be in a slightly better place. So maybe some of the shine to this famous historic fixture will have come back by then. Let's be positive about it anyway.
Yeah, and one more positive I want to give a shout out to is Bodar. Actually, I thought he was brilliant in the Standard goal this weekend. He's been consistently being quite well this season, but especially this weekend, despite Standard playing well and maybe ultimately even deserving the win. Although, well, I think a draw was a fair result, but he definitely did well. He also even almost got to that penalty from Dreyer. Well, he actually got to it, I think, but it was just a bit too hard to really halt it. But like actually the face leading up to the penalty there actually was already a show of quality from him, where he had a brilliant save. Unfortunately for him, then in the aftermath, the ball goes to the hands from, was it Fossey, I believe?
Yeah.
That's...
I think the thing with Standard as well, isn't it, is the thing we've been saying for such a long time now, and we know that they can produce some quality. You know, this weekend, I suppose, is a good example of it, and compete with top sides, of which obviously they're hoping to become again one of. The issue for Carl Hopkins is you know, how do they bring that consistently? You know, as we keep saying, that's what has to happen, because they can do it, but you know, they've proven that it's not happening consistently for them, and that's the challenge, and nobody knows the answer to that conundrum yet. One side who don't have many conundrums to kind of wrestle with, because they are just absolutely relentless, is Union Saint-Gilloise. They went to Stade de Paix in Charleroi and won 3-1, pretty convincing victory for them, quite straightforward, pretty clinical stuff. Amura bagging another two goals, that's his 10th and 11th of the season, so he's just behind Kevin Denke. He's given it the anything you can do, I can do eyes to Big Kev. It'll be interesting to see where those two finish at the end of the season in terms of goals. We know Amura's been a real revelation this season, you know, for everybody, I think. Charleroi kind of continuing to struggle, really. It's just not happening for them. 1-1-6 now in the league, and you know, nobody really taking things by the scruff of the neck and taking responsibility for what's happening on the pitch at the moment. Not a lot of great news for them on it. Off it, on the other hand, they did get some really positive news this week. They've got a new investor. A new American zebra is in town, David Helmer, who is going to be joining the board at Charleroi as a minority investor, a silent investor. He's going to be providing, I think, some strategic advice, Joris. He is... he actually owns, this is where it gets kind of quite interesting, he owns a Rwandan First Division side and owns some interests in African basketball scouting as well. So he's got some really quite bizarre and sort of slightly random other sports investments. But his background actually is originally in manufacturing, I think, laboratory equipment. which he's moved away from and is now kind of prioritising sort of sports investments. So I think he's looking to perhaps set up a multi-club network. That's what it looks like this is going, but it's not quite there yet. Anyway, David Helmer's come in and is going to be investing initially in the region of €6 million, which is important. Mehdi Bayat this week at the press conference was talking about how he could never foresee a point where clubs like Union and Antwerp and Cercle would see such a relatively dramatic rise in a short space of time. So in order to remain competitive, Charleroi decided that they needed, you know, to welcome a new investor, if not a completely new buyer, which was the less likely of the two. So in order to remain competitive, which I think is the right decision, because obviously they're struggling a little bit at the moment, so they need all the help they can get, and you know, this is definitely going to help. So there is some encouraging news, and Felis Mazu this week, when asked about it, said, "I haven't met David yet. I don't know too much about this, but I can only hope that it brings some serenity to the club." So just a little hint about some of the disruption behind the scenes at the moment that maybe is contributing to the on the pitch performances.
Yeah, but maybe he doesn't want it to be that calm, because it also, of course, comes right in time for the transfer window, and that can get hectic, I guess, as well. But and maybe he actually doesn't mind that. But yeah, definitely. Charleroi, talking about bogey teams, I was already talking about them a bit before with other teams, Cercle and Antwerp. But Charleroi and Union is also a developing one, because Charleroi still haven't gained any point against Union in the 6 encounters. This is a stat I can update and renew twice a season so far. they haven't gotten any points against them. Lost all the games since Union are back in the league. That is, of course, so like I said, 6th time now, conceding 15 and scoring only twice in these 6 games. So twice is they are improving. That the both these goals have come this season, also in this fixture, of course. But to be honest, they actually could have scored a few here. They were not that bad, or Union's defense was not always that great, maybe. But yeah, especially Hermans was having an unlucky game, already giving away more or less the first goal. Although I have to mention that point more with Union, the pressure they put on the field there, that high on the pitch, really, really impressive. Forced Hermans to, he should have probably kicked the ball away from the danger area instead of trying to play out. But he ultimately lost the ball, and it wasn't for Amoura, you could say, an easy goal, I suppose you could say, and to give Union the lead, and Amoura added to his tally later on in the game as well, of course. But yeah, Hermans, I was actually talking about, he on the other end of the pitch, he had a few chances, and he probably should have scored at least once, maybe even twice. Out of those chances, and then there were a few others, good chances, but where he did what he needed to do, of course, but that was just a save from Moyes or a block somewhere, ultimately. But not the most lucky of games. And for Union, I actually haven't written down much, but I guess that's a good sign generally. That, it's boring to talk about teams that are just getting points and everywhere and scoring well and go where the things are going well, I suppose. It's probably a bad thing that the world turns like that, but it is how it is. And you can't even say it's a fairy tale story anymore after these 3 seasons. The first season, you maybe could say that. Now we can't say that. It's just really impressive what they're all doing. And Amoura keeps on scoring. Maybe I want to come back to that point of Amoura and Donke that you were talking about, how they will end up in the top scoring list. Yeah, I will already taste the small caveat, like, will both of them still be in Belgium after January? That's a big question for me already. Also potentially, if they're in Belgium, if they are still at the same clubs as well. I've don't have, this is just based on nothing, of course, but like at least one of them I could see making a move inside Belgium, not with Amoura. I actually don't really see that with Donke, I wouldn't be surprised if he would turn up at a different team. Of course, their current sides will be gaining a lot of money if this scenario would unfold for either of those players. Want to pose that question, put that in the air, I guess. will they still be at their current club after after January? I don't know exactly when the Mercato ends, the window ends. But
I think that's a really interesting question, like yours, because they're both incredibly hot property at the moment. And on Kevin Denke's part, obviously, I think he did have an agreement with Ghent at the start of the season to potentially go there, and that didn't happen because Orban and Kuipers obviously stayed, so there was no need for them ultimately to bring somebody in. So he's still lucky in some ways to still be at Cercle, and they're obviously benefiting from the massive contribution he's making to them this season as well. But as we were saying before, there'll definitely be a succession plan there, because I think Rembert Vroman at Cercle will know that, you know, the clock is very much ticking on that deal, that's for sure. And there's been a lot of interest in Kevin Denke. A couple of agents that I know that I've spoke to casually over the last few months have actually asked me about Kevin specifically. So, you know, there are a lot of people watching him, and he will certainly have lots of options, that's for sure. Well, that's just about it for the Pro League, Joris. We'll drop down to the Challenger Pro League, which has reached match day 15 this weekend. Score roundup, as always, at the top. Yong Genk lost 1-0 to Patro Eisden. Sarang and Lommel drew 2 each. SL16, fine run in form, came to an end. They were thumped 4-0 at home by Timmy Simon's Dender side. Club Next lost 1-0 to Anderlecht Futures. Liers lost 1-0 at home to Zulte Waregem. Beerschot and Denza finished 2-1 to Denza in a rather remarkable game that we'll come back to why in just a second. RFC Liège beat Fonkmaran 1-0, and Oostend lost 2-0 at home to Beveren, which saw the end of Oostend T1 Stijn Vrieven. He was relieved of his duties today, Joris, and I think a sense that perhaps it just wasn't working and the players weren't responding to him, really.
That's how much a victory against Genk means now as well.
Every cloud is a silver lining for you, Joris, in a defeat, eh? Yeah, I think this one took everybody by a little bit of surprise, I think, coming when it did. But I think when you consider as well, Joris, that we're at sort of the halfway point of the Challenger season, and there being no real indication of a domestic improvement in form, I think they probably felt they needed to make the change in the hope that somebody new coming in can just, you know, add a few more points, because they're sitting very, very precariously above the drop zone at the moment. So I can kind of understand that decision.
Yeah, indeed. Like, I don't think it's a big surprise there. Regardless of the timing, maybe, though, like I mentioned, it's a bit weird after actually having a cup set, like Ben would like to mention it, just a few days before. But yep. The league form has been dismal, and maybe it was time for a change as well. So the signs coming out of Oostend are also still, like, it really feels like the club is really close to bankruptcy at the moment. They really need investors, and not like rather now, literally on the minute, than tomorrow even, because otherwise the whole existence of the club is in danger. So far, I believe the players have been paid at least, so at least that. But that's all right about right around everything that's still going well financially. Well, it's still all. Going according to plan, I guess, to financially, definitely not a big surprise.
Yeah, the clock is definitely ticking on them, and there's been a lot of attention in that over the last week as well. So although this is not going to add to the atmosphere around the place, I think it is understandable. And obviously the bigger picture is that they're desperate to retain their Challenger Pro League status at the very least, and that's obviously what's behind the decision more than anything else. But yeah, maybe we'll have more news on the ownership issues, because there have been some names mentioned as to being reasonably close to perhaps investing over the last week. So we might be able to kind of have some more news for you on that soon. In terms of what's been happening with other clubs this weekend, Joris, obviously Zalta are back top on goal difference, and that's courtesy mainly of Beerschot's defeat to the Denza. Beerschot are down to second. Denza are up to third after that win. Their decent form has seen them kind of really shoot up the table recently. Just on that Beerschot-Denza game, remarkable really, because we saw a new Belgian record being set this week as well. We should highlight this. This game saw referee Quentin Pirard give, wait for it, and just, you know, if you haven't already seen this news, just get your head around this, 10 yellows and 8 red cards in this game, and this is how it breaks down. So Beerschot got 6 reds, so that's 3 players during the course of the game, and 3 of the coaching staff, including T1 Andreas Weiland and his T3 and T5. So that's the 6 Beerschot red cards. And then Denza had 2 players sent off. So that accounts for all those cards. So yeah, Quentin Perard setting an infamous new record for the number of cards in a Belgian football match. 10 yellows and 8 reds. What do you make of that, Joris?
Well, I believe he was also the VAR or an assistant. Maybe it was a fourth referee. I don't know, but exactly. But at a game, I forgot the name now. But anyway, a game where based on his, so I guess it has to be in the VAR room. That there were also already a lot, not in disproportions, but still a lot of red cards or cards given. Well, yeah, red cards since it's VAR. Yeah, he's making a name for himself, but I'm not sure if it's the right one. let's put it that way. And definitely weird stats in the I don't think it's ever a good sign if you need to give that many cards. That's probably based. A lot of things probably should not have happened on the pitch and off the pitch, but it also makes it feel like you didn't have the game under control.
I think that's definitely what it underlines for me. I think that's why I chose the word infamous, that's for sure. Yeah. I think in terms of other sides, actually, we should mention as well that Beveren are up to seventh now, decent run of form, undefeated in their last 8, and they're knocking on the door of coming into contention anyway, near the top of the table at the moment, and that will be good news for them, because obviously they've been kind of stuttering and struggling, you know, largely unexpectedly this season. And the other side worth mentioning at the moment as well, obviously, are Lommel, who started so well. They are now winless in 7, and because of a combination of results elsewhere in the division this weekend, they have dropped down to 9th. So the pressure on Steve Bold is building a bit now.
Yeah, that was definitely one stat I really wanted to mention as well. Yeah, the negative stats of Lommel especially. Yeah, it's all falling apart so quickly again, it seems. It looked like they were on the right track in the beginning of the season, but now that all seems so far away already again. I'm not sure if they can turn it around, but if they want to have some higher ambitions this season still, then it will have to turn around real quick.
Yeah, they're on a downward spiral that's a bit concerning, I think, that's for sure, and we'll see how they get on in the run-up to Christmas. Well, that's just about it for this week, Joris. We know we've got Belgian sides in European action this week. The best of luck to them in their final games. Even those who've qualified, it'd be nice for you to bring us back a win. Coefficient points are always welcome, aren't they?
Yes, definitely. And also with this definitely and this definitely, I think I've set the record of definitelys I've set in this podcast. I think I'm also making a name for myself here, a new Belgian podcast record.
Yeah, we'll count them up. We'll count them up and we'll see how many we get. We'll see if we can beat, 18 cards in total, I think, for Mr. Pirard. Let's check in with him next week and see how many he produces next week if he gets allocated a game.
I'm quite convinced that I might be around that number now, but I'm sorry for the listener there. I'm very aware of it. I'll try not to do that to you or to your ears again. I did this all on purpose.
Have a great week, Joris, whatever you're up to. And you know that if you want to get in touch with us to drop us any listeners' questions for next week, or if you want to attack any of us individually, you know how to get in touch with either Joris, myself, or our Ben on our own social media. You can get in touch with the pod account as well, or of course you can email us. Likewise, if you like what you do, please do consider leaving us a little review on your podcast platform of choice. And another thing that you do need to know about is that we do have a Buy Me a Coffee account now. So if you appreciate what we do and you want to throw us a little coffee into the coffers to contribute towards the cost of running the BFP and bringing you the best independent coverage and analysis of Belgian football in English every week, then you know, please do think about doing that. And if you're very, very lucky, we might even sit down and have that coffee with you in person. So good luck to all the Belgian sides in Europe, as I was saying this week, and have a fantastic week, everybody, and we'll speak to you soon on another episode of the Belgian Football Podcast.